Richardson given time, floating for the back of the end zone, and Alec Pierce, touchdown Colts. He was wide open, and Indy finally finds the end zone.
That's from Fox. Finally finds the end zone. Words you don't usually want to hear. J.J. Stankovitz is on Twitter at J.J. Stankovitz, Colts.com writer, Colts Stadium PA announcer. How about that? With us on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. Twitch.tv/Chicago670theScore. How are you, J.J.? What's up?
I'm great. Good to be back on the airwaves in Chicago.
J.J., I need to understand your job because that's a lot. As it was described to us. So you are the PA announcer, but you're also writing about the Colts after the game. Is that how a game day works? And how can you keep the functions of those two jobs separate? Because PA announcer at an NFL game is high stakes, very important, and so is your other job.
So I lean on, I have an intern. She's great. Her name's Amanda Foster. She does a fantastic job writing articles. She'll write kind of the immediate gamer for Colts.com, handle any news that pops up during the game. And then, you know, because I do cover the team, I am here every day during the week. You know, I know the storylines going into the game. I have a general idea of what to look for. But, I mean, yeah, like I'm not like charting the game the way that I'll do when I go on the road and cover road games. So I rely a lot on Amanda. I rely a lot on the other folks who are up in the PA booth with me. Who will kind of throw me some notes here and there of just like, hey, jot this down. Usually during halftime, I'll have a minute or two to go check on the box score, just see what trends are going on. But it's definitely a different way to cover a game. But ultimately, once the game ends, I'm right back to being the team writer. I go down the locker room, you go to press conferences and, you know, resume that job. But there is about a 4-hour gap on game day where I'm the PA announcer.
Oh, JJ, we began the week assessing what the Bears themselves were saying about their now 2 weeks of lackluster offensive performance and what it says about how good they are relative to how good they thought they might be coming out of camp. How would the Colts fare in that regard? Do they think they're significantly better than they've shown?
Yes, but that comes with the acknowledgement that you give up 474 rushing yards over the first two games of a season. And, you know, Zaire Franklin has kind of, you know, made this point, like we can talk about how we're better than 0-2, but ultimately we're an 0-2 football team. So that's what we are. This team believes they are better though than 0-2. Like there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of returning guys. They believe in their coach. There's not, you know, you don't get a sense of a splintering locker room right now or anything like that. But really, this team, there are two main things this team needs to address that I think are issues you weren't necessarily expecting coming into the year. The number one thing I just mentioned, it's the run defense. That was supposed to be a strength of this team. They've allowed more rushing yards in the first two games of the season than any team since the 1970s. And now they're going to have to fix that run defense without DeForest Buckner, who went on injured reserve this week. The flip side of that, the Colts have only possessed the ball for 39 minutes and 49 seconds. So this is a team that hasn't just had the ball that much. They've hit a lot of explosive plays, but they've had a number of drives that have just petered out after three or four plays that have led to a punt, a turnover. Those need to be corrected. The Colts need to have longer drives, just have the ball more. That will help the offense out, obviously, in scoring points, but it also will help the defense and just get them off the field for a little longer. So those two things I don't think were expected, but they are things that early in the season absolutely have to be corrected.
And JJ, as you're probably very much aware of, the Bears have not been able to run the football. So I said earlier, this is the battle between the movable force and the stoppable object, if you will. Have the things you've seen going to practice every day kind of led you to believe that the corrections are headed in the right direction and what you've heard and what's gone wrong in the first two games as far as stopping the run?
Yeah, the Colts, it's not even necessarily in practice, but against Green Bay, they got shredded in the first three drives of that game. Josh Jacobs ran for over 100 yards. It was ugly. And it only wasn't a 17-0 game because Zaire Franklin forced a fumble at the goal line. But in the next seven drives of that game, the final seven drives, Green Bay went from averaging 6.7 yards per rush to 2.4 yards per rush. So they made a switch. Gus Bradley made it, kind of intimated to us this week that the Colts went to, from matching 11 personnel with nickel, they started playing base to Green Bay's 11. So they got a third linebacker on the field, took the fifth DB off, and that led to some improved play. The key again, though, can you do that? Can you play base to 11 consistently going forward and risk having Jalen Carlisle, a rookie linebacker who's kind of the third linebacker, risk him having to cover a wide receiver? Or do you drop a safety down? There are different things you can do there. And again, you have to do it without DeForest Buckner. So it's a big challenge for this run defense. They all know, by the way, that if they can't stop the run against Chicago and you let Caleb Williams ease his way into this game, no matter what Caleb has shown, whatever unevenness that he's shown in the first two games, they know how talented he is. They know how good of a processor he is. And this team knows that if they let Caleb Williams settle into this game, it's going to be a tough afternoon in Indianapolis.
The comparing and contrasting of sort of team psychology.
Right.
This is endlessly fascinating. And you're dealing there with something Bears fans are dealing with here once again, and that is trying to balance a quarterback's development, trying to make sure that the ball is safe while also making sure that a special talent can make magic. Now, Anthony Richardson has been on the wrong side of that equation so far this year, despite the one astonishing highlight that we already know for sure is going to be one of the touchdown passes of the year already that we saw. But he's not protecting the football. What's their philosophy with making sure he can be special while also being safe?
Well, I'll give Anthony this credit. That was the first multi-interception game he had in his career in week two against Green Bay. That's not something that's been a problem for him. It's not something that's even been a problem during training camp practices. Like, you know, going back to, you know, remember like some of those practices when I was covering the Bears where it's like, you know, Mike Glennon threw a couple picks in this practice. Like you're kind of, you know, grabbing the side of your chair going, I don't know how this is going to go. We haven't seen that with Anthony. And the pockets have been really good. This offensive line is one of the best, if not the best in the NFL. So he's staying upright. He's got a good feel for pressure. It's more a matter of like, he is going to have just some inconsistencies because he's only started 19 games since high school, six in the NFL. The Colts know that. They're prepared for this going in, that he might have a game where, yeah, he throws two picks and one, you know, both of them, you're sort of left scratching your head. Is that on him? Is that on the receiver? Is that on everyone? Like what it may be. But there's not any worry about what Anthony Richardson's doing in terms of protecting the ball. For the most part, you know, Shane Steichen has said he's making good decisions. His eyes are going where Shane's eyes are going on a play, which is always a good sign when you have the quarterback and coach on the same page. And there's a lot of confidence that while there are going to be highs and lows this season, the highs will ultimately outweigh the lows. Even if so far through two games, you might look at the lows and say, that's been, you know, a reason why the Colts are 0-2. Week one was not on Anthony Richardson. That loss to Houston was not on Anthony Richardson. He played a really good game. It was the run defense that let the Colts down.
Looking forward, I guess, and Anthony Richardson, I see a guy who's shown the potential to be dual threat. I know he had six carries for 56 yards last week and a touchdown rushing the football. How much of that is by design and his deliberation on whether to take off or stay in the pocket and try to climb the pocket as far as looking at what the Bears bring to the table with their pass defense and their ability to rush the quarterback?
Yeah, Anthony's not a guy who looks to scramble when he gets outside the pocket. He's really good at keeping his eyes downfield and still processing what is ahead of him. He's not just going to, okay, I'm outside the pocket. I don't trust anything, so I'm going to go take off. He's not that kind of a quarterback. When he escapes pressure, he's still looking to make a big play downfield. The Colts, I think, are going to ease their way into more designed runs for him. You know, that hasn't been a huge staple of this offense yet. But I think as you start seeing this offense develop a certain identity as the season goes on, you'll see more of that. I think it's going to be interesting in this game where obviously Matt Eberflus is going to play a lot of zone. That's not an easy defense to scramble and get a lot of chunk yards on scrambles against. But those Bears defenders are going to have to stay disciplined, whether you're in your rush lanes or on your assignment in zone, because if you
Did we lose JJ?
He's going to try to beat you.
Okay. I think you dropped out of the very end of that answer there, JJ.
Yeah, it's more, Dan, it's more just about the Eberflus defense probably not being conducive to Richardson scrambling, but it being where that's going to have to be a very disciplined defense because Anthony's always looking for a big play when he gets outside the pocket. Mm.
What is their level of desire to blitz? Because that's something that we've noted where D'Amico Ryan's going into that game. We know that they're a pretty blitz-reluctant team, but they didn't waste any time sending extras to make this confused Bears offensive line into the Keystone Cops. Is this also something we're going to see?
Gus Bradley does not blitz very much, but he will turn the dial up if the game plan calls for it. Last year in week three against Baltimore, the Colts blitzed, I think, 20-something times against Lamar Jackson. Mm. When I looked it up, that was the most Gus Bradley had blitzed since like 2016 with the Jaguars. Like, it had been a real long time since he did that, but that to me showed some growth in Gus Bradley that, hey, the game plan calls for it. We got to do it. None of it matters, though. It won't matter if the Colts blitz if they can't stop the run. Like, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but they got to stop the run. You cannot let DeAndre Swift and Khalil Herbert and Rashawn Johnson get going in this game. Because, again, like you mentioned, those guys have not had much success on the ground this year. The Colts cannot let that happen. If they do, it's not going to matter if they're sending five, they're sending six. They're going to have a tough time on defense.
We have heard this stat repeatedly this week about teams 0-2 winning, what, 70% of their games in that third game. And this is obviously fits the bill for that for the Colts. You said they weren't panicked and they seem like they're in control. I mean, what is the sense that you get? It's interesting because Jonathan Taylor's like that guy from just a few years ago trying to get paid and considered one of the top backs in the NFL. He said it's not just on Anthony Richardson to get this done.
Yeah, I mean, the starting point for why I think this team's just not even close to the panic button is there are guys who were in this locker room in 2018 when the Colts started off 1-5 and they made the playoffs. In 2021, the Colts started off 0-3 and they should have made the playoffs that year had they not completely melted down in week 18 against Jacksonville. There's a lot of confidence that, hey, look, there's a lot of season left. There's a lot of veterans in this room who can support Anthony Richardson, like you mentioned, and not put all the pressure on their 22-year-old quarterback, who, by the way, is still the youngest starting quarterback in the NFL for the second straight year. So it's a good mentality. And I think then also just coming from the top of Shane Steichen, where you never sense like a wavering in confidence with him. Like, I've been a part of, you know, press conferences with coaches where you can kind of sense like they're grasping for answers. They're grasping at straws. And you never get that sense with Shane Steichen that he's at that point, that he's anything but like, no, we're going to get this fixed. And like, that's not just like a reflexive coach speak. It's like, no, we're going to get this fixed. And I know exactly how we're going to get it fixed.
You believe him?
I do. He's shown me no reason to not believe him. I mean, look, last year, Anthony Richardson goes down in week five. You're thinking, all right, well, there goes the season. He squeezes every drop he can out of Gardner Minshew and almost gets the Colts to the playoffs. The Colts are one drop pass on 4th-and-1 away from probably being AFC South champions last year. So, and that was with a backup quarterback. You had some offensive linemen coming in and out. You never really got Jonathan Taylor going. He was banged up later in the year. He's a good coach for whatever is presented in front of him. So absolutely, I do believe him.
What type of atmosphere do you expect for this game? I know fans tend to panic before anybody else does. I can tell you that just we're talking about a 1-1 team here in Chicago, and the sky is falling for some people because the offense has looked that bad. What do you think the atmosphere is going to be like in a dome in Indianapolis come Sunday?
Lucas Oil Stadium is a tough place to play, man. Like, it's loud in there. These are really good fans that we have, even if the team's 0-2. And I think if the Colts get off to a fast start, it's going to be real tough on Caleb Williams, like real tough in that building. I know we're probably going to have a lot of Bears fans coming down to our house, but like Colts fans are going to show up. I have no doubt they're going to be loud. I really don't have to do much. I could, you know, just be like, it's third down and everyone will, you know, cheer and yell. So I think it, as long as the Colts get off to a fast start, go down, get a touchdown on the first drive, get a stop on the Bears' first drive, that'll be kind of this cascading effect that should make it a pretty tough atmosphere for the Bears to come into.
JJ, thanks so much. Enjoy your weekend and all your various jobs.
All right. Thanks, guys. You're the best.
That is JJ Stankovic, Colts.com writer and Colts Stadium PA announcer this hour.
That's wild to me.
Brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. I still don't know how he does it. That's amazing.
His explanation made sense on paper, but like it just seemed like it'd be helter-skelter. Like you don't see something that you like. That conversation between walking downstairs with your intern and understanding, make sure you're not missing anything before you go ask questions. That's got to be intense.
He is Marshall Harris, the guy with the cool t-shirts. I'm Dan Bernstein. Although nothing against Chicago Fretworks.
I like your t-shirt.
Works. My guys. Those are my dudes. Yeah, Square.
I like your t-shirt.
Thank you. I have a couple of them. They're just old and they get all pilled and my wife tries to throw things out and I have to rescue them and save them. And
how often does she try to throw, like how many times is she trying to throw out like a specific item that you just won't
usually
let go?
It's like I have socks that where like there's no heel on the socks.
Why do you have that?
Because those are my heelless socks.
This is like the pants you were talking about.
My assless pants. Yes.
Let's get rid of that, Dan.
Didn't you say also that there's an underwear thing that your wife tries to throw some underwear?
Oh, that's multiple pairs of what she says have technically ceased to be underwear. They're a waistband.
Why are you wearing that?
Because they're mine and and she, and you know what? And I had this true story where there've been other members of the family where she has said, "Hey, throw those pants out." Like, "No, don't listen to mom. Keep those pants. Don't throw them out. Do they make you comfortable? Do you like them?"
This is
all
like
you do is downgrade where you wear them.
This is like an origin story on like a hoarder's documentary.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of that in me. I just, until something can't be used, it can be used.
I don't think the underwear that are just a waistband can be used though.
It feels like underwear when you put it on.
No, it doesn't.
But the waistband is there. I mean, it's not really doing the job it's supposed to do.
We're going to work on this. Yeah, we got to work on this.
It kind of ends up like a...
No, I get it. Like you don't have to explain it.
It looks like a grass skirt, almost. Like I should be like, you know, hula dancing in it or something.
This is not something...
I have I get my dad's ukulele.
You do understand that this is beyond odd, right? This is not normal.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm going to start caring now.
That's a theme.
Hey.
That's a theme.
I'm going to start caring now. Joe Ostrowski next on The Score.